I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Philadelphia School District announced that it was going to close 37 schools by the end of the school year. The response from many of those affected by this decision has been loud and critical. Under the district's plan, 17,000 students will be relocated to new schools. 14 of the schools identified for closure are among the most violent in the district. And some of the proposed mergers, like Germantown and Martin Luther King High Schools, have historic and longstanding conflicts and rivalries. Ben Harold has been reporting on these two schools and their reaction to the planned school closures for Newsworks and the Public School Notebook. And he joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Ben, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Also with us is Malika Aziz. He's a facilitator and trainer for the National Gang Crime Research Center. Malik, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Yes, thanks, Marty.
And our third guest is Karen Lynch. She's chief of student support services for the Philadelphia School District. Just moved to the city a couple of months ago. And Karen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you so much.
Ben, let me begin with you and actually begin with some of the reporting that you were doing on Martin Luther King and Germantown High Schools. Part of your reporting was about some of these longstanding conflicts and rivalries between these two schools. Why did you pick these two schools?
Well, when the district made its announcement that it wanted to close 37 schools and relocate and reconfigure a bunch more in early December, one of the most immediate concerns that we heard from parents and community members and students across Philadelphia was concerns about safety. Certainly, there are a number of concerns, but safety really has been an overriding issue. And particularly at the middle and high school level, one of the things that we've heard over and over again is, you know, concerns that there are longstanding neighborhood rivalries and that when you close one school and merge student populations, you're affecting both outside of school. Students may have to be crossing some of these neighborhood boundaries and lines to get to and from school. And then once they're inside school, they might be sitting in class or working, you know, inside the school alongside potential adversaries. And so we decided that, you know, this was an issue that we really wanted to take a deep dive at one particular school set of recommendations at to see, you know, what was really happening now. We know that Philadelphia has a history of gang problems that dates back to the 70s, but wanted to kind of get a sense for what really is happening right now and to really talk with people on the ground who are working in schools, in rec centers, in law enforcement, with young people on the streets to kind of get a sense for what they're concerned about and if we really should be worried.
And from your reporting, it sounds like there is a lot of concern in these neighborhoods and with members of these schools about what it would mean to close Germantown and move those students over to Martin Luther King.
I think that there were some very consistent things that I heard in talking with folks up in Northwest Philadelphia about the district's proposal to close Germantown and send about 500 or so students to Martin Luther King. One, that these groups, while they're disorganized and, you know, calling them gangs might kind of create the wrong impression. They're very kind of loosely organized and neighborhood-based and local. But they are active and there are continuing problems with violence. People also generally said that right now things are relatively quiet. There haven't been kind of active violent feuds at the moment. But the concern is that just about anything can spark one of these feuds, and that once it gets going, it can be very violent, and it can run for an extended period of time. And I think what people in the Northwest that I talked to really were concerned about when it came to school closings was, you know, not so much the plan per se to close Germantown, because I think people recognize that it's an old facility, right. It's you know, almost three quarters empty, and that something needs to be done. But what they really wanted to hear was a detailed plan that was going to show how the district intended to move 500 students to a new school across these lines, merge them together, and account for these factors that they say are very real.
Let me turn to you, Karen Lynch. Is the district ready with that particular plan?
So I think what's really important to point out now is how seriously the district considers this entire matter. School safety, in and apart from the issue of Germantown and Martin Luther King, is extremely important issue, and it's an issue that's taking place and very much concern for people, not just in Philadelphia, but all across this country. I mean, we've seen instances recently, certainly we've seen Newtown, we've seen things that have happened all across this country, most recently just last week in Atlanta. So the district is taking this seriously. The district also recognizes, Marty, that this is not just an issue that is the school district's issue, and therefore we have definitely reached out and are reaching out right now, even before the SRC makes the final decision to look at all issues of safety related to school closings, particularly where we know that there has been historic rivalries like Germantown and Martin Luther King. We're engaging the entire community in this effort, and this conversation today is just one more opportunity to be able to say to people, yes, number one, we take this seriously. Yes, we're working not just with the school district safety office, with our chief, who's with our safety office, Chief Dorsey, but we're also working with other city agencies, community organizations, and not just looking at the issue of rivalries between communities and how children are going to get from Germantown to Martin Luther King, but also looking at how young children who are going to travel a longer distance to school, who are still walking, are going to travel to school, and all kinds of other safety issues.
Well, and just even picking up on that, I mean, is there a plan? Are there safeguarders? Have people been identified to help make sure that the route from home to school and back to home is a safe one?
Absolutely. The plan is growing. It's growing incrementally, and it's growing as we talk to different groups like Town Watch and neighborhood associations. As we, for example, just 2 weeks ago, the city convened all of the Health and Human Service Organization leaders in order to see the various aspects of a plan that they could put together in order to serve students that are going to move from one location to another and need to be served.
But can you understand, at least for those people who are concerned and have been critical and have been very outspoken in their critique of this plan, can you understand their concerns?
Oh, I absolutely understand their concerns, which is why we've reached out to groups like Neighborhood Watch and PAN. This is why Mr. Aziz has talked with Chief Dorsey. This is exactly why, because there are groups that are within communities that know their communities intimately and know the climate and the vibe of their communities and know when something is about to happen. And by working with students today in January, February, December, we're better able to predict, we're better able to prepare, and we're better able to ensure the safety of children who are going to start school together in September.
Let me turn to you, Malik Aziz, and based on the work that you've been doing for decades now with gangs, are you concerned about safety issues related to some of these school closures?
I'm very concerned. Traditionally, in Philadelphia, in those areas that we're talking about,
and we're talking about Northwest Philly.
Northwest Philly. It's been a long time rivalry between the neighborhoods in those areas. What we have to realize that the school is in the community, and the children will be going across lines that have been boundary lines for decades in the city, and the mentality is still there. And so that's why it's important that there is a plan between the school district and the community on how to resolve the conflicts and also to prevent the violence that could occur if there is a conflict.
What are the, speaking broadly though, and looking at Philadelphia and some of these loose gangs that Ben described, what are the conflicts about? I mean, what if we're going to anticipate problems? What are at the root of some of these problems?
Well, being frank with you, they can arise over anything, but as long as they identify themselves as a gang or identify themselves as a clique or a crew in that community, then that's how the response will be. And it could be over a girlfriend, it could be over arguments, it could be over anything, and it could be over drug turf or any of those kind of things. But the bottom line is that they have set up these boundaries around the schools, and you know, you say, let's take Germantown, Martin Luther King.
Sure.
One, Germantown has always been Haines Street area around there. That was the turf, the gang that was there, and Martin Luther King was in Somerville. And they all had a long time conflict between those two gangs right there, generationally passed down over the years to the kids, and they still identify to today with those names.
But is there a way to intervene and a way to prevent the possibility of violence?
Well, definitely have to be a community response to that. You know, we can't. You know, and plus we got to remind you that mostly all the kids that's going to school aren't involved with these gangs. And this is just a small amount of these young people are being involved in this. So it should be easy to identify them and to network and work with them around this issue so we can keep the peace.
Going back to you, Ben, as you said, looking at Germantown, about two-thirds or three-quarters essentially empty. I mean, the school district has a challenge in front of it, which is that it has something like 53,000 empty seats, as Superintendent Height has described.
And I think that's something the district has done very well in the course of its school closings process and the facilities master planning work that it's done, is making the case that really something needs to be done. I think people at this point are very familiar with the school district's budget situation, having had to borrow $300 million this year just to pay its bills, facing hundreds of millions of dollars in potential deficit next year and the years beyond. And also recognizing that there are all of these empty seats, that there is an aging infrastructure, and that there are a lot of buildings like Germantown that are half empty or more so. And I think when you look at the numbers at a school like Germantown, it's pretty staggering, because what you see is that actually the enrollment drain over the years has been dramatic. And so when you look at the neighborhood around Germantown, there's only about 530 or so kids in the neighborhood who actually go to Germantown. But about 750 go to magnets, and 813 of those kids are going to charter schools. Mm. So already, the district has a problem with this exodus of students for public school choice options over the last 10 or 12 years. And I think that, they've successfully made the case that something needs to be done to right-size the district in order to address that concern.
Let me go back to Karen Lynch. And obviously, these are difficult choices that a district has to make about closing schools and looking at some of these numbers. But nonetheless, in hindsight, and I'm going back to the reaction, not everyone is angry about this, but a lot of people are. Do you think there could have been another, perhaps even better way to make this announcement or to talk to communities about having to make this tough decision?
When you say a better way to make the announcement, I'm not exactly certain what you mean, but I think the point has been made. We estimate that there are probably about 2,400 students that are traveling out of the Germantown catchment area in order to go to other schools across this district. And so when you stop and consider how many empty seats there are in that school as well as in other schools, and more importantly, if this discussion is to move beyond the financial reasons why we're doing this and actually look at just the need for a better educational opportunity for students that attend school here in Philadelphia, I think it was absolutely important to do so. This was not a recent decision. The schools were closed last year. This has been a plan that's several years in the making. So when you say, was there a better way to present this plan, I would say that many in Philadelphia know that the closing of schools in large urban jurisdictions is not something that's unique here and that it's happening.
But are you saying, and we're almost up in a break here, that by moving some 500 students from Germantown to Martin Luther King High School, they're going to get a better education?
No, I'm saying that's the goal here, that one of our goals is, one of our concerns is obviously financial, but the other concern is the dollars that we're spending in order to maintain buildings that are falling apart. Those dollars can be better purposed and repurposed by improving the educational opportunities that exist throughout this city.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Karen Lynch, and she's Chief of Student Support Services for the Philadelphia School District. Also with us is Ben Harrell, WHYY's education reporter. I should add that WHYY partners with the Public School Notebook to cover the Philadelphia schools. And also with us is Malik Aziz. He's a facilitator trainer for the National Gang Crime Research Center. And today on the show, we're talking about the Philadelphia School District's proposed plan to close 37 public schools by the end of the year. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Garden State Wine Growers Association supports WHYY and presents its annual Wine and Chocolate Trail Weekend, February 9th and 10th. In celebration of Valentine's Day, the trail features wine tastings and chocolate samplings from noon to 5 p.m. at participating wineries. From the Skylands in northern Sussex County to the tip of Cape May, there are six different trails showcasing wines from more than 40 wineries throughout New Jersey. Full details at NewJerseyWineTrails.com.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we want to end the membership drive as quickly as possible, and we can do that when you make a pledge of support. We have a challenge today from two generous supporters of Radio Times and WHYY, Joan and Mark Lapioker. They will give WHYY $3,000 if 110 listeners make a pledge of support during today's show. First of all, thanks to Joan and Mark LaBeoker for their generous challenge. It means so much to us. Now it's up to you to meet that challenge and ensure that we can make our goal. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. And you can always pledge online at WHYY.org. Think of what you get every day from Radio Times and WHYY. That's worth a pledge of support. And a special bonus for a $60 pledge, we will send you the Radio Times anniversary mug designed by Tony Auth. How cool is that? 1-888-345-9499. Make that pledge. Thanks so much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're talking about the impact of planned school closures on safety here in Philadelphia, talking with Malik Aziz, facilitator and trainer with the National Gang Crime Research Center, Ben Harrell, WHYY's education reporter, and Karen Lynch, Chief of Student Support Services for the Philadelphia School District. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Why do give us a call, especially if you are in any way affected by this proposal. Ben, I know you wanted to add something.
We had asked before the break, Marty, about the question about could this announcement have been made in a different way that maybe would have generated less community resistance? And I think one of the things that I've heard a lot in the Northwest and across the city at the public forums that the district has held is that while people understand the need to do something, and probably to do something pretty big in terms of school closures, I don't know that a lot of people have really bought into this specific plan and these 37 specific recommendations. And I think there's two big causes for the concern that I feel like I've heard consistently. One, there's a lot of people on the ground who feel that they weren't consulted prior to the recommendations being made.
And these would be parents, perhaps?
Parents, community leaders, students, folks who feel like they know the schools, they know their communities, they have ideas on if something needs to be done, this is how we would have liked to have done it to address these concerns that are now rising to the surface. And I think people are also concerned about the lack of detail that they've gotten from the district about how these plans will be implemented. I think everyone agrees that it needs to be a community response around safety and transportation and academics and some of the other issues as well. But I think what a lot of parents and students in particular have been saying is that in order to feel comfortable with this recommendation and to support it, they'd like to have those details now so they can consider it and work through it and offer tweaks rather than waiting until after the vote to learn exactly how this plan is going to be implemented.
Does that make sense to you, Karen Lynch?
Well, I think it absolutely makes sense. I think that's one of the reasons why there were a series of meetings that took place throughout the fall that really attempted to solicit from community members and from parents. And in fact, we had a forum with nearly 100 students that attended that really asked a series of questions, solicited input. The forums were intended to say, essentially, if schools were to close, what would your priority be? How would you like this to take place? So from that information was gathered. We identified the criteria that would be used for considering and evaluating, and then schools were considered for the closure list. And after walking through schools and listening to people and hearing issues and concerns, that list eventually dwindled down to about 37. That list was produced and published and shared. And the month of December and really throughout the entire month of January, and I know this because I personally went to all but one, we heard from people exactly their concerns. And so that was the time when people on the ground really had the opportunity to hear why the decisions were made, hear what decisions are made. But I think that you raised another point that I think is particularly important, and that's what's going to happen now.
Details, right?
Details. So right. While we don't have the final list of schools and the SRC has not voted, what we do have now is the opportunity to really start that process of inventorying schools, seeing what services and programs exist in each school, seeing what equipment, materials, and so on exist in schools, and also getting principals together. And that's the part of the plan that we're implementing right now.
But that sounds like a disconnect, because what we hear from Karen is that they say they feel they were out in the community, they solicited response, they shared information with people, they included the community. But Ben, from your reporting, you're saying the community doesn't feel part of this process. Why this disconnect?
The sense that I get is that while the district has had an extensive series of meetings, the meetings prior to the announcement weren't school specific. So people didn't have a chance to weigh in prior prior to the recommendations being announced on the details of their specific school and what they thought should happen. In the meetings that have taken place after the recommendations, I think, again, it goes to this question of details. The meetings that the district have had have been large, and mm-hmm. in many cases you'll see hundreds of people mm-hmm. from up to a dozen different schools coming out, and they're very emotional. And, you know, I think that it has been a chance, as one leading clergy member in the Northwest said, you know, that it's a chance for people to blow off steam and to express their pain, but it's not really a nuts and bolts way to look at the details of both the recommendation and possible alternatives. And so Enon Tabernacle Baptist Church in the Northwest, for example, has decided to run their own series of meetings where they are working with individual school communities one at a time to try and look at the data, come up with alternatives, or to look at how a specific recommendation could be implemented. And I think there's a difference between giving hundreds of people from a variety of schools the chance to kind of express general concerns versus doing the real nuts and bolts work of making a major transition like this feasible.
Karen, then Malika, I want to get you back into the conversation.
So in a lot of ways, I think you're absolutely right. And in some ways, I'd probably differ. In the month of January, it really gave us a good opportunity to hear the concerns, hear the issues, and hear different proposals. So there are several proposals, in fact, that people have submitted. And I'm telling you, a few have had some really relevant ideas raised and additional possibilities. The example that comes to my mind first is University City students that have literally organized themselves in such a way. They've done great research, public speaking. They have pulled themselves mm-hmm. together. And the one thing that they say is, this building is not where we need to stay. This building has outlived its time. What we really want to do is stay together as an intact group. And so that opportunity to hear that information. The month of February is going to be a series of school-specific meetings where there's additional information that we've got to gain about and need to hear and want to hear about specific schools and groups of schools. So in the month of February, that's when you will see that.
Just one quick question here, then Malika, I do want to get you back in, but we're talking about 37 public schools that have been identified. Is the district willing to revisit any of those schools, or are these the schools that are going to be closed?
Oh, absolutely. The decision has not been made, and I'm glad you raised that, because that's what the month of January was really for, to see, are these the best combinations? Are these the best groupings? I would guess, just sitting here, I'm not making any major announcements, but I would say that that now's the time when we're looking at, listening to, and making decisions about what's going to actually be recommended to the final plan to be recommended to the SRC.
Let me go back to Malika, because we've been talking about these school closures, the community response, and obviously this issue of safety. And from the years, frankly, decades of work that you have been doing, how do you suggest the district or particular schools, prevent the kind of violence that some people are concerned about, or even some of the conflicts in a very concrete way?
Well, it definitely has to be a rapport between the community and the school. And to have those kind of forums. And I'm talking about having the perpetrators that are part of the problem.
Bring them in.
Bring them in and give them some kind of oversight on why it's important that there don't be conflict between the neighborhoods and the children going to school. I found that when I was in Chicago, which has so many organizations working with gangs, and still. They had last year over 500 murders.
Yes.
And 60% of them was gang-related. And that's the problem, is that you get – sometimes you can have an auditorium full of young people that's not even involved with that, and you're talking to them, and they're not the ones you should have in the auditorium.
But would it be fair to say that if we're talking about gangs or loose cliques in Philadelphia, that these are students that – either don't go to school or not in school anymore? I mean, are they part of the school community?
Well, they're part of the school community. There's a lot of, like you say, on any given day, a lot of students are out of school.
Yes.
And those are the ones that are probably involved with the gang stuff or the disruptive behavior and all those kind of things. And the children, they attend school regularly and are not part of it, but they seem to always get caught up in the hype of that kind of stuff going on. And that's why it makes it look like it's a major, major problem when it's really a select small group of children that is involved in it.
But the kids that are not involved, that are going to and fro these schools, they need to be protected. They need to feel safe going back and forth to school.
Right. And that's why you need to have those kind of forums for them, so they'll know what to do in case of something happening.
Go ahead, Ben.
And one of the things that I heard during the reporting that I did on the ground in Northwest Philadelphia from law enforcement sources, and I'd be curious, Malik, to hear you weigh in on this, was that a lot of the young people who are still in school are not necessarily members in any formal sense of a gang, but might kind of affiliate themselves with the name in order to protect themselves or to try and kind of ward off potential danger or potential threats. And the concern that folks had was that if you have kind of a changing of the rules and a changing of the interactions with more groups and kind of a new situation inside the school, that even the students who are not formal members of a gang might be more likely to claim the neighborhood, claim that gang name.
For their own self-protection in a way?
Or? And in order to kind of increase their numbers and know that they can have someone to call on if trouble does arise. And so, you know, I talked to one young man who's currently a 10th grader at King. Didn't identify with a gang or a neighborhood, and, you know, just kind of a regular guy, played basketball with his rec league and, you know, those kinds of things. But he said, you know, soon his reaction when he heard the district's recommendation was, I think they want us to kill each other.
Oh, really?
And so he was already preparing. You know, he said, I am looking to go to college. That's what I want to do. But I am expecting that my 11th grade year is going to be lost to fights. And I think, you know, as Malik is saying and as Karen's saying, certainly that mindset can be addressed and dealt with. But it's extensive and it's deep-seated, and there's reasons that young people feel that way. And in order to really disarm that mindset, I think a lot of people will tell you that the work really needs to happen early and be consistent in order to make sure people have a reason, young people have a reason not to embrace that.
Or not to worry about their future.
Absolutely.
And worry about their lives as well. Yeah.
So, I think starting early is exactly the key to this. And I also agree with you that involving young people in the solutions and coming up with the solutions, not just people, young people who identify with gangs, but also involving all students in the plan is absolutely important because, I mean, it's critical. But I think the thing to consider here as well is that 60% of the secondary school level students in Philadelphia are already traveling outside of their catchment areas and their immediate neighborhoods to go to school. And with this plan of placement, while Germantown and Martin Luther King is identified, students at the secondary level are going to have another opportunity to be able to select another seat that's available elsewhere in the district. It's going to increase that 60% number, so not every student leaving Germantown is going to actually attend Martin Luther King, and I think that that's a nuance about the placement that's going to take place with school closings that people are not always familiar with.
And let me just quickly reintroduce the three of you. That's Karen Lynch. She's Chief of Student Support Services for the Philadelphia School District. Also with us, Ben Harold, WHYY's education reporter, and Malik Aziz, facilitator trainer for the National Gang Crime Research Center. And we are talking about the Philadelphia School District's proposed plan to close 37 public schools by the end of the year. Under this plan, something like 17,000 students could be affected and relocated. And we're talking about some of the pros and cons of this decision. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Ben, as the three of you were talking, I'm also thinking about the problems that were at South Philadelphia High School, you know, a couple of years ago. Got a lot of coverage, a lot of press. And one of the solutions was a good principal. I mean, a strong principal. We had him in on the show. What role do you see administrators and school principals and counselors and others at school districts playing directly with some of these students?
I think in most regards, in terms of running a safe, effective school, leadership is really key. And having a strong leader who knows his students or his or her students and knows his or her staff and also knows the surrounding community and is able to kind of leverage a variety of resources to make sure that not only kind of effectively able to intervene when something does happen, as we recently saw at South Philadelphia with the incidents of outsiders trying to bring guns into the school and the school safety officers being right on top of that in a very effective way, but also being able to proactively identify potential problems and diffuse them before they happen. And I think, again, strong leaders are able to do that. And strong school communities are able to do that. Some of the concerns we hear from teachers around the school closings and safety issue is that when you have kind of this kind of shifting of both student populations and staffing patterns and new teachers and, you know, new relationships being formed, that it takes a while to sort all of that out and to have those relationships built and to both between adults and students and between adults and the surrounding community. And while that process is getting sorted out, that's a time that people are fearful of.
Malik, we've been talking about teachers and students, administrators, the district. What about parents? I mean, if we're talking about making sure that the children feel safe in this city going to and from school, what role do you see parents playing?
Well, parents definitely play a large role because, be honest with you, it starts in the home. And the parents have to have a strong relationship with their children that's going to school, even living in the community, and even the parents knowing the situations that goes on in the neighborhoods. They have to have a relationship with the students. I worked in plenty of schools with the principals, back to what you said about the leadership.
Yes.
And I know they don't mind me mentioning their name, like Principal McAllister over in Bartram, who had an issue with some gang activity. Miss Jump at Bieber and Overbrook. I've been in a lot of schools who called and asked for help, and it wasn't even a budget thing or money thing. It's just that those issues were affecting the school. So I went in and we did this. We had the auditorium with the kids, and we explained to them the pitfalls of belonging to a gang, or why it's important that you get your education and those kind of things. And I brought in people that the kids know from celebrities, like Freeway. I brought him to Bartram, and that was a big deal because he relayed the same message: to stay in school, don't join gangs, and those things. And then when they hear from those kind of people, they really take that to heart. And so diffusing violence is one thing, but in the prevention part of it, the school and the community has to have a connection. Where if something happens in the community, they have to know before the next day that it don't come into the school. And that's important.
And we should say that you were a member of a gang a number of decades ago as well here in Philadelphia.
Yes.
I guess the sort of heyday almost of gangs.
I was in the heyday. And that was something. Mm-hmm. But it was more organized then. And that's, if you have a gang and you figure if it's not organized, then everything goes.
Yeah.
And to the gangs that of my day, you had to consult with the leadership before you did anything. And everything didn't go. Respected the seniors, respected children, respected people that had they wanted to go another way, especially the athletes and the ones we recognized in the community had something going for themselves.
Yeah.
And it was a hands off. On those children,
but would you say that if we're talking about loosely organized gangs, that's potentially a more volatile situation because you don't have leadership, you don't have the kind of rules of an organized gang,
and that's why whoever is working with them, young people like that, you have to have more of a hands on with them. I ran in that situation at Ada Lewis, who was really a couple years back was really having a lot of reported incidents of violence. We came in with a strategy, which was more community based. And more people from the community that the children recognized, and the incidence of violence was reduced.
Yeah, I think you point out something that's also the reality in Philadelphia in particular, and that is for each community, there may need to be a different strategy depending on, different nuances and the character and the climate and the culture of the individual community. And not all communities here are alike. In fact, Philadelphia is a city of communities, and they're different. I think when we talk about parent and parent involvement, it's also important to point out that home and school is a critical organization that can be very, very helpful in this effort, and so we have reached out to them in some of the 37 schools. We know that we have very, very strong home and school associations, and so for the schools where students are anticipated to go, it's important that those relationships and alliances are formed now and grow.
We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation with our guests and with our callers. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Talking with Karen Lynch, Ben Harold, and Malik Aziz about proposed plan to close 37 public schools in the city of Philadelphia. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. 52 years ago, the Philadelphia chromosome was discovered in a Fox Chase laboratory. The Philadelphia chromosome was the first specific genetic abnormality linked to a specific cancer. Fast forward to today, and Fox Chase is offering a new diagnostic test for advanced cancers. Through next-generation DNA sequencing, tumor-specific genetic abnormalities now can be matched to precision drugs. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, now part of Temple Health.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're in what we hope is the final stretch of the winter membership campaign, and we will get to that finish line with your support. We have a challenge today from Joan and Mark Lepioker during Radio Times. They will give WHYY an additional $3,000. You heard it right. That's $3,000 if 110 listeners call during Radio Times today and make a pledge of support. Thanks to those generous donors for making that challenge. Now it's up to us. You and me to make it happen. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499, and you can pledge online at WHYY.org. We provide the interviews that keep you informed and entertained, and you provide the funds to make it happen. It's a system that has worked for decades, and it will continue to work if you make that next step from listener to listener supporter. You decide the value and make a pledge. 1-888-345-9499. Also, pledge online at WHYY.org. You'll be glad you did, and so will we. Thanks so much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The Philadelphia School District says it needs to close schools because of thousands of empty seats. The district also faces steep financial challenges and says that closing schools will save some money. This decision has sparked an outcry from some students and parents, teachers, members of city council, even community leaders. And it's our topic for today's Radio Times. Again, talking with Malik Aziz, facilitator and trainer for the National Gang Crime Research Center, Ben Harold, WHYY's education reporter, and Karen Lynch, Chief of Student Support Services for the Philadelphia School District. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Karen, let me just go back to you and then I'll get to our callers. Most of the schools that are slated to close have a high minority population. As much as, you know, 90 or even more percent of the students are minorities, either African Americans or Hispanics. Many of them are poor schools and poor children going to poor schools, and even some that are disabled. Is there a revisiting of this issue? Is there a reason why these particular schools are slated for closure, ones that have such a high minority population?
Well, the plan outlines the four criteria that were considered for each school. And I would share with you that academic achievement of the schools was one factor that was taken into consideration. But another factor taken into consideration in a good number of schools was the low student population, low enrollment at the schools. And if you look at certain parts of the city, you will see that where there has been change in population, where more of the students are leaving the catchment area, I mean, we talked earlier about Germantown, that has resulted in a low number of seats. So I would say to you that there are a variety of factors that have resulted in where the schools are. And obviously, I said earlier that there are schools that are on the list now that may not be on the list moving forward. Right. But for the most part, we looked at the particular issues related to that school's closing as a determinant for what happens in the future.
Go ahead, Ben. Then I do want to get to our callers.
And I think, you know, that question, that issue really highlights the dilemma that the district is facing and that parents are facing in many regards, particularly when you look at an area like North Philadelphia, heavily African-American, largely low-income, and is really poised to be devastated by the school closings, where up to 12 schools mm-hmm. would either be closed or relocated in the area. And you take a school like Duckery Elementary School up near Temple University, and what you see is that, you know, again, it's a school that has a dramatically declining enrollment. It's more than half empty. And there's a school nearby that's MH Stanton that's in similar circumstances, mm-hmm. also half empty, also struggling in some of the same way. So on paper, it kind of makes sense to kind of consolidate it, try and save resources. Mm-hmm. It's not that far away when you look at a map and so forth. But when you talk to parents, they're very concerned about those five extra blocks that they might have to walk their third grader or their fifth grader to school. They're concerned about losing the relationships that have allowed them to kind of get to work on time and drop their kid off early at Duckery, and now maybe they won't have that at the new school. And they're concerned that the new school might be more violent, that when you look at the reported incidents at that example and at a number of other examples of the district's proposed closure recommendations, that the actual receiving schools that students would be sent to are actually have higher rates of violent incidents and lower academic performance. Certainly not in all of them, but in a meaningful number. And for those parents, they're very concerned about that.
Well, let me get some callers in. Looks like we have, I don't have enough letters here, but looks like council something from Center City, Philadelphia. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning. This is Councilwoman Cindy Bass. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks very much. Sorry, my computer didn't give me enough letters, but go ahead.
That's okay. I just wanted to call in. Both Germantown and King are in the 8th District, which is the district I represent.
Right.
And obviously we've been greatly concerned about what's getting ready to happen, what the proposed changes are. And I just wanted to mention a couple of things. Regarding Germantown and its lower enrollment, I think anytime you have a school that has not been, it has not had the level of investment that would attract parents to send their children there and attract young people that they would want to attend Germantown High School. I think that that's something that we definitely have to look at. Over the last 10 years, Germantown has had, I think it's something like 9 different principals. And so that would suggest that the district really has not made the sort of investment that needs to be made to ensure that everyone is getting a quality education and it's the kind of environment that parents and students would choose. Also, I wanted to mention that, you know, there was just the gentleman was mentioning traveling, from Imhoff Stanton to the Duckery School and so forth. One of my schools, which is Pierce Elementary at 23rd and Cambria, is slated to close. They're asking students to walk to E. Washington Road at 29th and Clearfield. Now, this is my old neighborhood. I know this area very well. And the idea that students as young as, I would say, about 6 years old in the first grade would have to walk an extra 8 or 9 blocks is completely out of the question. What kind of resources are we going to put into place to ensure that there's going to be a safe corridor? What are we going to do to make sure that there are crossing guards at these intersections, which are very, very busy? What are we going to do about the young people within Cook Elementary School right now on the east side of Broad Street and asking them to cross Broad Street and go to school on the west side?
Well,
what kind of safety and security for elementary school students are we putting in the place for those young people?
And these are all good questions, and I'm looking at the clock, and I do want to get a response. I'll start with you, Karen Lynch, and thank you so much for calling into Radio Times. Appreciate the call. Yes, go ahead.
So I think the issue of resources and the investment in schools is a valid concern. It's a concern that was raised as we, as I indicated, we went to community meetings all across this district, and I can't think of too many schools that said, no, we're getting all the resources that we need, and we have all of the investment, and we're really, really appreciative for the great investment that we've received. Is quite the contrary. So as you have a jurisdiction that's challenged for its dollars and where it can make investments and resources, that becomes a difficult day. The other point that was made about safe passage, this is exactly why.
For elementary school kids.
Particularly for elementary schools, elementary school children traversing large roads and wide streets, it's absolutely important that we redeploy our crossing guards. That's one of the things that the chief is working to look at. Before the plan was even published, we had public safety in the city look at the plan. We're working with organizations that organize safe passage. And, it's going to be absolutely critical, but it's also an opportunity for neighbors and family members and that parent next door to help now with so many months of time to plan and to organize to help groups of help move children to and from.
Ben, is this the kind of concern that you've been hearing that we heard from Councilwoman Bass?
It is, and I think one parent in particular sticks in my memory, a gentleman named Frank Thorne, who was at the meeting at Dobbins Elementary talking about the proposed closures, or Dobbins High School, talking about the proposed closures in North Philadelphia. And he's an alumni of Strawberry Mansion High School, which was slated for closure, and he was arguing passionately to keep the school open at the same time that he was explaining that he had chosen not to send his daughter there. He had chosen to send her to a charter school as well, and it kind of, again, highlights this dilemma that both the district and parents are facing. And when I talked to Mr. Thorne afterwards, he said very much the same thing that Councilwoman Bass said, is that what he really wanted was an investment in his neighborhood school so that he could send his daughter there, but he didn't feel safe with the condition that it is. And I do think, one additional point that it's worth noting on the question of resources for schools, that even the savings that the district is able to generate as a result of whatever closures are approved, that those savings for the immediate future are going to be used to continue to address its deficit, that it's not going to be for new expenditures at the receiving schools.
And the savings is something in the $30 million range. Is that – I think I read that. Is that true, Karen?
So I think what's really important here is that – without that savings, we would be in an even greater deficit than we are right now. And the decisions that we're making today and the actions that we're taking today are very, very long overdue and has helped create the financial difficulty that the city schools are in right now.
But it does sound like it will take some money to help this transition process.
Well, it's going to take some money to help this transition process. And to the extent that we have partners that are external to the district, foundations, the city, other organizations that are lending to this effort of safety and the plans that we're implementing, all the better.
I guess that's one of the details that I think many in the media and in the public are still waiting to get a firm sense of, is that we know the district is projecting to save about $28 million a year as a result of the savings. But that doesn't, from what we understand currently, that doesn't take into account all of the transition costs that will go into moving students and all of the carrying costs of buildings that go unsold. So the actual net savings and how that money would be used, if for anything other than deficit reduction, is still unclear for us.
Let me get another caller in. We have, looks like, Ken from Center City, Philadelphia, joining us on Radio Times. And Ken, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm a retired teacher, 37 years with Philadelphia Public Schools. I'm concerned that this plan is being implemented by people who know very little about Philadelphia. A year ago, they knew almost nothing about Philadelphia, like Dr. Haidt has been here a few months. Ms. Lynch has been here a few months. The Boston Consulting Group has been here since the spring. They don't know our neighborhoods. They don't know our schools. And I know they're doing a quick learn, but I'm just concerned that in a few years, most of them are going to move on, and we're going to be left with a disaster.
Well, Ken, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. That's in your court there, Karen Lynch.
So, Ken, I appreciate the question, too. And I think if the plan was completely reliant on myself or Dr. Haidt, then you might have an argument there. But the plan, in fact, has been underway for more than 2 years. I would share with you that individuals within our facilities office that helped identify these schools, people who are within our school management office, people who are across this school district who have been in the district for years, who have graduated Philadelphia's high schools and who have lived in Philadelphia, born and raised their entire lives, have looked at this plan, have researched these schools. We've walked these schools in the very, very short time that Dr. Haidt has been here. He has been in more than 70 schools in this jurisdiction. And so, yes, we are learning the neighborhoods. We are learning Philadelphia's nuances. But we are heavily reliant upon people who are extremely familiar with the city of Philadelphia.
And Malik, I'm curious about what you're looking for from the district as someone who's been so intimately involved.
Just the other day, a good friend of mine, Michael Rosenberg, was assigned to the Bryan School's principal. I worked with him when he was at Grover Washington Middle School around the issues of violence, and it was a great relationship. And that's the kind of stuff the school district has to do. They have many superstars, that I like to call them, principals and staff, that get the job done. And to identify them and have them in strategic places, and to really have a working relationship with the community, a real working relationship, and recognize the strengths of the community in helping deter the violence in the schools. Those safeguards that the councilwoman mentioned, they can be established and they can be strong ones to help the children get from point A to point B and to return back to point A.
That's Malik Aziz, facilitator, trainer for the National Gang Crime Research Center. Also with us, Ben Harrell, WHYY's education reporter, and Karen Lynch, chief of student support services for the Philadelphia School District. And I'm Marty Moscoen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get, looks like Matt from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. And Matt, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm going to try to make this quick. I have so much to say, but I feel like the closure of schools is going to make it that much harder for parents to get involved, which is already primarily, I believe, one of the biggest problems. All the failures of the district and the charter school growth notwithstanding, would it be possible, maybe starting with some sort of pilot programs, to in this market-based society we live in, would it be that crazy to maybe cough up some per diems, some grocery money to parents to get involved in becoming part of these schools, especially as they transition and close to, since the district, I don't really think, is necessarily going to be there for extra investment, which we already acknowledge is needed to some extent. You know,
can we
possibly pay people K through four to come in and be involved with their kids' schools?
The idea of paying parents to get involved in their schools, and you have a very quizzical look on your face, Karen Lynch. But, but obviously talking about the important role that parents play in what we've been talking about.
So I think that parents, and I said this earlier, play an extremely important role. And I also think that at times like this, it's really important to be as creative as possible. And so, you know, all ideas are worth considering and worth hearing. I would share with you that I would see such a pilot as one that would probably be implemented by the business community, and one where, you know, I'm not exactly certain how it would be implemented. We have schools across this district that have very, very strong home and school associations, and I think there's merit there.
Well, we're almost out of time here, Ben. Now, so what's ahead as this issue unfolds or continues to unfold?
Well, I think what we've been seeing over the past month or so, as the district has held its community forums on these recommendations, is kind of a move from thinking about this as the plan to close schools to thinking about it as 37 different plans to close each of the particular schools. And I think what you see is that there are some that are generating, you know, relatively little opposition. People understand it, they get it, they're on board. And there are others that, you know, people are really upset and they're really active in trying to develop the kind of counter proposals that Karen talked about, and, you know, pursuing other strategies to shut this, you know, to kind of reverse course as well. And I think, you know, to the caller's last question about parental involvement, again, I think at these schools you'll see a variety. And I think what people are really looking for now is situations where they're asking the district to do no harm. And so when you look at some of the specific recommendations, and, you know, one example that comes to mind right now is Gompers Elementary up in the Winfield section of Philadelphia, where parents feel like they have a good school, they have a safe school, and the proposal is going to make things worse. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of thing I think we're going to hear more about in the coming weeks leading up to the vote on March 7th.
Well, to be continued, my thanks to all three of you, Karen Lynch, Ben Harold, and Malik Aziz, for joining us today on Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. Do stay with us, though, for Hour 2. We'll be right back.